Welcome to Biggest Geekass. We are your hosts. I'm Randy.
And I'm Joe.
This is episode 171 of our show, and the date is Tuesday, December 26, 2023. And we have with us a special guest, David Gwill. How you doing? How was Christmas?
I'm doing. It was, it came and went.
Okay, that doesn't sound too exciting. Pretty matter of fact, nothing too exciting at the Gwill household.
Well, we're out in the, we moved several states over, so we don't know anyone out here.
Oh,
but bummer. We kind of like it that way.
Oh, you like it? Okay. You like out in the, out by yourself.
We'd be left alone kind of people, huh?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You got a pretty good crowd. Looks like Patrick Demo, Mac Thompson, Martinson, Mr. Boivin, howdy, Shadow and Son. You got a good crowd showing up today. I didn't see who else got in the house. That might have been
for some reason. Folks are talking about J. Scott.
Right. Oh, geez.
He's not going to ever be on this show. So
no, unlikely. Unlikely. But yeah, we did you get any, we did. Did you get some gaming done this past? You didn't game at all, did you, this past week, Joe?
No, we played Friday. Didn't we play? Was that, wasn't that this past Friday online, or was that
maybe
Friday
it was? Before? Oh, Friday before. I paid. Mercurius Alicus, new guy, and Cal's in the house. That's cool. Welcome, Mercurius. I don't recognize the name, but we're glad you're here. Crafting Gamer. Hello, sir. I did play this past Friday. I played Friday. I had I ran my first Horde Wars game.
Ah, okay. So it was the best.
Was pretty fun, and my friends were commenting. Got a buddy from Indiana's visiting, and he's I'm like having questions. They asked me questions as we're playing. I'm like, I don't know. I can't find it. And then I would text DM Blackwall, and he's like, must be nice to have the creator on the on your phone. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm big time. I don't play. Mm-hmm. So I got to get David Gwill's number before I run Dungeons and Delvers so I can do the same to him. Hey, I don't understand this rule, but it was kind of fun. We had a really good time. I played something we had run before at Cabin Con. We had run it. Oh, gosh, I think I'd played in it. It's the main scenario, Goblins Attack in the book. And we had a good time, and they, of course, solved it in a very unique way. So it was good.
Goblins attacking the what?
Remember the Goblins Attack scenario where you're in the tavern and they...
Oh, sure, sure. You were, oh, I was wondering if you ran that or just your own thing with Goblins.
No, that's gotcha. The one I ran. I'm going to run something unique for you guys when we start this week. So it's going to be something different. Larry said 2 weeks ago, Mr. Elliott, confirming your questions. So,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Arn Man says he ran his first Horde Wars on Friday. Me too. Went well. Rules went smooth. I didn't create a tough enough encounter. Yeah, I just ran the one straight from the book, Arn Man, and it went pretty well. I rolled pretty low, so they ended up not fighting too much, too many nasty creatures. So they got to have some randomness in the setup of the game. And so they did pretty well, though. But I thought they were going to be in trouble. So they split the party. And that was a little dangerous. So did it right, though. But happy holidays now, because we're past Christmas, I guess, to folks coming up. And I had a good Christmas. Joe was over for a while.
It was a good time.
Good dinner last night, and it was good friends. So definitely loved it. But why don't we talk to our guest here, Mr. Gwill.
Sounds good.
David, how have you been, sir?
Oh, don't mind me.
He only got invited on here. Who cares? Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to just give you a chance to tell folks kind of what you're in the middle of now. Most folks here know you created Dungeons and Delvers, which is a fantasy RPG. If you want to talk about what you're up to right now, if you're still hard at second edition, right?
Yeah, that's actually what we did the past few weeks, has been doing some playtest runs to make sure, you know, the armor is damage reduction thing is working as intended. And a few other little tweaks to the system, like skills and such.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So second edition. So you already have the kind of D20 based on fifth edition ish, and then you have a dice pool. So the second edition, which one of those are you modifying, or is it both? or is this the new version?
Just the D20 version. The dice pool one, that was most for our daughter when she was 9, which would have been 3 or 4 years ago. But we don't play that one anymore. So we're just kind of all in on the D20 stuff. That's the one that she actually likes the most. You know, she did the dice pool one, the D21. She like that's in her room. She reads it all the time. She does makes her own adventures that runs us through them.
Cool.
So we're just all in on that one.
So is that who you usually use to play test your mechanics? Is your kids and your wife and you guys all play together?
Well, yeah, we don't have any local group, but this works out fine because if they understand the rules, like, you know, when she was, we were doing this when she was like 9, and if she can understand it, I figure it's not that complicated then.
I agree. I think that's not a bad litmus test. I wonder, just in general, what's your background, David, as far as like just TTRPGs in general? When did you start? I'm sure you probably, did you play D&D from the beginning, or are there other games that you liked?
I've been playing since I was 11. My mom got me that Easy to Master Black Box edition.
Mm.
I don't know which one that is. I've heard it's basic or something. It goes like the little 3 or 5. But then when I was in junior high, people were playing second edition. So that's what I mostly played. Was the second edition. And then my cousin, he brought over Rifts books. So we started playing Rifts. And then third edition came out. We started playing that. And that's also where I started playing other things like Shadowrun, Macross, a little bit of Plating Fantasy. We even tried, there was a Dragon Ball Z RPG that we played for a very little bit.
Right.
Some White Wolf stuff. So we kind of all over the map, but then really, you know, D&D's been the one that's always stuck.
Right. So would you say, short of what you're working on, would some D&D version be your favorite TTRPG? Not counting Dungeons and Delvers. Would you say some D&D game would be your favorite?
Yeah, out of all the official versions, I would say the one that I would have the least issues with is third edition, which I, you know, some people didn't like it. A lot of numbers. I disagree. To me, third edition felt like kind of a streamlined second edition, which would be my favorite one there with all the settings and stuff. So
right.
Third edition would be the one that I think I would have the least issue with.
Yeah, I think settings are my favorite. We had a super good time with second and third, Joe and I and our groups. Probably I had the most love for one of those two at the time I was in it. When my desire to play third is a little less now, just because of all the moving parts. But I think that's just because I'm old. I don't think it's a knock on the game. So.
Well, yeah, I was really into that one in early 20s. So I think that was, you know, not 40 now. So maybe nowadays, if I hadn't already played it a bunch to like know how it works, I think nowadays trying to learn all that might be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it would be getting back on the bicycle for me at this point.
So is, I just note, I'm looking at your, you know, the screen there, Awful Good Games, that's your company. How long have you had that company?
About 10 years now.
Really?
It was actually a name that, a guy that I used to game with, he's the one who we were thinking about publishing a setting for 4th edition D&D, and he was the one that pitched it, and it just kind of stuck.
I noticed that, I've been deep diving on you a little bit, David. I know you and I have, you helped me a lot during making that adventure, Tragedy at Tygon's Falls. Dave really gave me a lot of good advice. He was talking to me back and forth, showed me how to do some things, did some things for me editing wise and setting up the format, which I really appreciate, David. That's awesome. I wonder though, as I was diving into your blog, did you used to play Dungeon World? That kind of surprised me.
That's where we started publishing stuff actually.
Really?
That was, it was after 5th edition was announced. We were doing playtests and stuff and to see what it was going to be like. And then we kind of realized it's just going to be 3rd edition with some 4th editionisms kind of renamed and stuck in there. Mm-hmm. So we weren't really that interested in that. And then the guy that actually pitched the Awful Good Game name, he brought over Dungeon World one day It's like, hey, have you guys heard of this? And I hadn't. And so he let me borrow it. I tried reading it. It's not a complicated game, but it's very vague.
Agreed.
So it's hard to play in that sense that, like, it doesn't really explain how you're supposed to play it. There is a fan book that tells you how to play it, which I thought was odd. And I don't think we ever actually played it correctly to this day. But at one point, it was on Google Plus, was still a thing. People were talking about making classes for it. Someone was asking for help on a Vancian thing. I pitched some ideas. And then Adam Coble, he actually said, hey, you should make a Vancian Mentor class. And so that's one of the first things we actually did. And we didn't play Dungeon World very long or often. We did make Sunderworld for it. And we did kind of play test it in a roundabout way of doing that. But then we kind of went off and did our own thing. We kept making classes for it and magic item things because we were really good at that. People liked it, but we weren't really that interested in it after, I think, maybe a year. And it kind of just became like, well, we'll just publish these things because we have ideas and stuff. And then, you know, then eventually we just kind of stopped.
Yeah, I remember my first exposure, almost only exposure, was at Gen Con. They had like an independent game room where you'd come and you can just show up at any time and play. And I got exposed to Dungeon World. Had a really good time, but I thought the rules seemed very, very easy to grasp. But when I got my copy of the book, I was like, this is kind of vague. What's a move? What are we doing exactly? I think the writer had his own idea of language that he thought would be clearer to people than it was. I'm guessing anyway. I don't know. But I didn't think it was bad for a dungeon crawler.
You said moves.
Yes. I thought it was.
That reminds me of a system where
Everything in Dungeon World. Oh.
Right? Isn't it? Isn't that? I can't remember the system, but everything's a move.
Kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything you do is a move. And everything you do has to kind of be shoehorned into a move, which for a game that's built as it's a story game, it seems really artificially restrictive because I remember when I tried playing it online with someone and we were fighting the monster. I don't remember what, doesn't matter. I just like, well, I'm just going to go hack and slash it. And he said, well, no, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm just going to walk over and hit it. And he was like, okay, that's a hack and slash move. And it's like, that's what I said. Well, you're not supposed to declare your move. You're supposed to say what you're going to do. And it's like, yeah, but so I have to describe what I'm doing. And in a roundabout way, you're going to arrive at the move that I'm trying to do. Why are we doing this? Cut out the middleman. That's what I'm doing. And it seemed really bizarre. Like everything you do, I want to go get information. Well, the GM's got to find a way to either shoehorn that into a move or he has to make up a move on the spot, which can take a while. And if we were playing D&D, I want to go gather information. Okay, make a streetwise check. We're done. And that's it. There's no, hold on a second, on a 7 to 9, I got to pick this or that or whatever. It's very cumbersome to me.
We have a question here in the chat. Patrick Demo asked you this, David, and it leads us into design. David Gwill, what is the greatest challenge of game design in your opinion? Any advice for another game designer?
The greatest challenge.
Yeah, that's a big one to open up with, huh?
For me, it's, if you're talking like about the whole package, it's organizing the information and art. But if you're talking about making a system from whole cloth, then I would say, you know, like we started with 4th edition D&D, and then we got rid of everything we hated about it, which was almost everything, but we kept the D20 mechanic. That was easy to build on. If you're going to make your own core mechanic, I think that would be a difficult thing to figure out in a way that where existing systems kind of did a lot of the legwork for you, but, oh, I want to do a D20 mechanic, but what's the math going to look like? What about monster math? You know, make sure that's it's all working as intended. I would think that would be the hardest thing. Because we've tried to do stuff like, oh, let's do like a dice pool thing for it. And then, okay, do you want to count successes? Which I think that's how Shadowrun worked. I wanted to do a wound level thing. Well, I've seen White Wolf do that, but in the D&D context, how would I make that work in a way where like monsters aren't overpowered, things aren't too easy, things aren't too hard? That would be challenging, I think, to fully flesh out and implement.
Do you personally have any advice you would give a game designer starting out? What's a big now? I think I could quote you, David, but I won't, because you tell me this a lot. I'm wondering if you'll remember.
You make the game that you want to play.
Right, my boy, David. That's right. That's good.
Don't see. Some people will say like, oh, don't make another D&D clone. No, make another D&D clone. If you want to play like, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, but parts of it are they don't work the way you want, then get rid of those and then put the thing in you want and then play it a bunch to make sure it's working as intended. But you make the game that you want to play. Don't try to go, well, D20's been done to death. Dice pool's done to death. I got to think of some kind of weird, I don't know, trading card mechanic to do – like, no, that's weird. And the thing is, I don't care about – I don't actually like those bizarre mechanics like special dice or whatever.
Yep.
Really, if I'm going to buy a game, I want, you know, to – the setting thing is good to have, like, you know, interesting things that aren't just like, okay, it's pseudo-medieval European D20, but I've changed you know, one or two things. If that's all you want, then I think you just household D&D just to do that and you're fine. But you know, if it's not working, then, you know, break the whole thing apart, build it from scratch. You know, like we did the random spell drain. We did armor's damage resistance. We changed the race mechanics, the lore, all the spells are all redone. Everything's different. So we can't just say, oh, our game is just third or fourth or fifth, but here's a household document. You're good. It won't work like that.
So I was looking at that with the spells. So you don't have a level requirement on the spells, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-mm.
But what seems to be the controller is either you have to have prerequisite spell talents to get to a particular spell that you might want.
That's kind of a limit.
But the other thing is the drain. So you could potentially pick a spell that the dice range for the upper limit of that drain is beyond your, say, willpower for the wizard. And then it hits your wounds and vitality, and I can't remember the exact order. And you could, like, not KO yourself on one casting of a spell, and which sounds cool in a way. You can go Nova and then pass out. But that seems kind of like a limiter, too. You look at the spell, and you see the drain, you're like, oh, I only have six, so this probably shouldn't choose this one.
Well, the other thing is that if you take a bunch of drain and you run out of wound points, your spell doesn't actually even go off. So you can't just say, well, screw it, I'm gonna do 10d6 drain, I'll just go Nova, and then I'll die or whatever. If you fall unconscious, you don't finish the spell, so nothing happens.
That's
so
true.
You can gamble that.
I forgot about that caveat. Yeah, that's true. But you could go down to one. You can go down to like a sliver, like you have one little piece of skin left and just enough to get the spell off. And then if someone comes up and blows on you, then you pass out.
Yeah, you can do that.
But it's a risk. So looking at the drain, you have to compare that to what you have and choose wisely.
Yeah, and you know, you can kind of, what we usually do is go like, well, the average is this or that. Mm-hmm. Let's try to cast it. And, you know, maybe you'll roll. I mean, we've had kids, they've rolled really bad. Like, oh no, 12 points on a 2d6 roll. Whoops.
Ouch.
What were you, and this has come up a couple of times in the podcast, and you've had comments on it, which I really appreciate, and others do too. And Joe and I have gone back and forth on this. I'm not sure where Joe stands, but like setting or mechanics, when you were developing Dungeons and Delvers, did you focus more? It sounds like you seem like to me you really like the mechanics side of things, but was your setting, do you have an implied setting for that game, or is it more just your interpretation of monsters and that's it?
I don't really have a hard setting baked into it. Mostly okay. I was focused on, because when I was a kid, you know, we would make our kind of our own setting, which a lot of times as a kid, it would be some kind of pseudo-European thing. Mm-hmm. Mostly I was focused on getting a good mechanical framework because I figured people will just kind of do their own setting anyway. For second edition, we do have there is going to be a map and an actual setting there. But I think setting the mechanics, I would say you got to get the mechanics laid out, because if your game sucks, everything's confusing. If it's a dungeon world, I don't care what the setting is, or I'll take this setting, I'll port it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But you got to get that mechanical framework laid out. So I actually want to play your game. And then, you know, if the setting's interesting, if the setting sucks, then whatever, I got the good, the mechanics are good too. Anyway, I'll just build my own setting.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Cause Dungeon World, just the idea, the name of that is a bit evocative and sounds like it could be a cool setting. However, it's a, I looked it up. It's a Powered by the Apocalypse game.
Right.
Which,
yeah,
that's why it has the moves. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one of those, there's only like one rule games and, or maybe a set of two or three each, and each character has its moves, and it's kind of dumb. When I heard people describe it, I didn't really care for it.
I thought it was more fun to play than to hear about. And once I read it, I was like, I didn't know how it matched what my experience was at the table, but that's a Dungeon World thing. I was wondering, also, David, we had you wrote a couple articles on your blog in particular connecting to a few of our podcasts, and I really liked it. They were really good to dive into, and I liked your thoughts on things. In your Magic system, you have a drain mechanic.
One of them does.
It's your main wizard guy. Now I'm trying to remember.
Wizard and sorcerer has that. Sorcerer right. has the other one.
Cleric's
everything else operates. Yeah.
So you chose that drain, and that's in addition. There's not point. Are there points, or is it just drain?
Drain.
Spell points. Okay.
So unless you're talking about you have a sustain mechanic.
Right.
A lot of the sustain that I'm trying to remember was set points, but the drain is a. Is a dice.
Yeah. So sustain stuff was for. Yeah, the sustain stuff is more like you cast the spell, it's active on you, and so you have to sustain that. And so your willpower points are reduced by that amount. Mm-hmm. And that was like something I got from the Dragon Age computer game. But anyway, what were you going to say?
Well, my question was with those. So did you on purpose feel like you wanted the wizards and sorcerers mechanics to be different from the cleric or priesty type guys with their miracles and faith? Did you do that on purpose because you wanted them to seem really different mechanically and story-wise?
No, I don't like making mechanical stuff different for its own sake, because then it comes across as gimmicky.
Okay.
I start from a flavor position. Wizard, to me, the wizard magic and the sorcerer magic should be kind of unpredictable and dangerous, ergo they're randomized. Clerics and druids, they're getting their magic, you know, hey, it's, they're getting gifts from the gods themselves, so their magic is safe and predictable.
Okay.
The difference with classes, though, is the clerics, you know, okay, you're given, like, two miracles at level one, and then you can build on those. Wizards get a lot, and they can learn more whenever they find scrolls to do that, and sorcerers, they get very few, but they get a whole lot of spell points, basically.
Yeah,
and they also you know, the more you... Yeah, and so it always starts from a flavor first approach, and then we once we figure out how to want this class to, like, if we were going to write like a book or do a movie on it, how would it work in the context of the game world, and then we will frame mechanics around that.
So I also liked when I was looking at it. At first, I was like, "Well, all the spells are tied to mechanics, or it's tied to talents. How do you do the spell book thing?" And then I saw, oh, you can learn a new spell, but if you don't have a talent, if it's not based on a talent, it says it takes longer to cast, and there are other caveats to it. So you can know it. It's just not as good as having the talent associated with it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Anyone can learn a spell in the game. Like, so if you're a fighter and you find a fireball scroll, you can make a check to learn that spell, and then you can cast it. You just got to have the scroll in hand. It takes a lot longer, and then your drain costs are maximized. So if you're like a fighter, oh, I'm going to cast Fireball. That's 8 points. It takes a long time. And you don't have that willpower buffer the wizard has. So the wizards, like, they're not learning the spells. They're also mastering them. So they have it like, you know, muscle memory, where everyone else, you can learn it. And then you can multi-class into wizard at some point and use this wizard talent to master that spell. So you could have a fighter
who
goes to the wizard, masters the fireball spell, then he can do it.
Okay, so a wizard, a fighter could find the scroll. He could cast it off the scroll, but that doesn't mean he could cast it the next day. He doesn't know it.
Well, he can. So you have to learn it first, which okay. takes a while. But once you learn it, he can cast it over and over and over and over again.
Oh.
It's just going to take him a lot longer, and he's going to burn through 8 of his hit points every time. Oh. You don't get a roll, and he also can't enhance it like a wizard can, because it's a lot of the enhancements, they're based off of wizard level. So a fighter, you know, you can do baseline fireball. A wizard of the same level, he can actually boost the damage, boost the area of effect, boost the range by suffering more drain, and okay. he'll be fine. So there's a whole, you know, so yeah, fighter, rogue, whatever, they can learn these spells, but they're going to have a much more difficult time. They're going to be limited on what they can do with it. Wizard's going to have supreme flexibility.
And that drain comes off their hit points, since they don't have
willpower. If you don't have willpower, yes. If you don't have the willpower points, it's going straight to your hit points first.
Hmm. Have fun with that, fighter.
Gotcha.
But, it's, you know,
well, some,
you
I imagine, yeah.
And you need it. You have extra hit points or health, whatever. I can't remember exactly. You have wounds and vitality for that game. So they have extra because they're, you know, buff fighters. So maybe they want to take a risk and cast that spell if you really need them to.
Well, if they get the drop on enemies, yeah, okay, there's a bunch of guys over there. Fighter can be like, I'll just throw a fireball out. Or if it's a utility spell, like way later if you get teleport, you know, maybe the fighter could do that. Although he can't enhance it, so he can't teleport very far.
Right.
So scrolls aren't like in D&D, if he casts it from the scroll, he has to learn it first. He doesn't actually, the scroll doesn't burn up then, like in D&D.
No, because that didn't make any sense to me either. I know in older D&D, there was a whole weird thing where, like, if you were a wizard, you found a scroll, you could copy it in your spell book, which would destroy it for some reason, but then you could copy spells out of your spell book back and forth freely, and that wouldn't go away. So what we did is, scrolls are scrolls, but then there are magic scrolls, which those ones, that has a spell baked into it. Those ones, anyone can use them. They cast a spell, which has been pre-enhanced as well, and then those get destroyed in some fashion. There's a whole table that tells you, how do you activate it? How does it get destroyed? Those are separate things.
Right. Okay. So you have the one-shot item as well as the more useful, durable item. That's cool. You don't have to find a whole wizard spell book to find a spell, especially with this fellow over here or over there that, you know, never put spell books in the adventure, even though there's wizards all over the place.
I do it everywhere. They all have spell books.
There's also tables in there that will let you roll up a spell book as well. So if, you know, hey, Randy, if your players kill a wizard, you don't have to go, you can just roll really quick. He's got this in there.
And, you know, that was a big failing in the old game.
Yep.
They had lots of other random tables in the back of the DMG. But I think the biggest problem Randy had was he didn't want to go through all the things and write everything down. I think if you had a table that you could roll a few times and have a randomized spell book,
that would be cool.
That would have been fine. Yeah.
I mean, because it wasn't bad. If I had, like, Joe only remembers that he thinks I never gave spell books. I did. But, like, if I used a module, don't lie, Joe. If I used a module with a wizard, it would be, she's shaking his head. I'm not sure if you can see it, David, but, you know, he can't be pleased. So anyway, if you had a module with
some players, right?
Some players did. But this guy, I've had 40 years, man. I still can't make this guy happy. But anyway, in the module, they have the wizard spells that they have selected because they had memorization. Mm-hmm. And I would say, well, they're in the spell book. You can have those.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be it. And Joe's like, that's all he has? I'm like, yep. Which makes no sense because he's a ninth level wizard. He's probably found some spells beyond just what he prepared for that day using D&D approaches. I wonder, David, with your system, do you find everybody casting spells a lot? Or is it really the fighters in your games tend not to do that very much?
My wife and kids, they don't care to min-max, or they're not aware of doing it. So I've never actually had any of them sit down and go, like, I'm playing a wizard. Hey, you want to read my book and try to learn the spell? Because it takes a while, and you got to make an ability check to see if you can do it. They never try to do that, and I've never really thought about doing that either. And when I've done play tests where we did games up to, like, level 17, no one thought to do that either.
Really?
Yeah, because as a wizard, you could make a scroll. Can you make scrolls as a wizard automatically, or do you have to pick a talent?
No, you can copy it you know, as many times as you want, which, you know, you could do in older editions as well, although they make you do the – you got to spend gold and for special inks and papers or whatever. But no one ever, I did have players in our the playtest campaign from back like in 2017, I think. One of them was a heavy min-maxer, and there was a wizard player, and none of them thought to do that. And but the thing is, that it makes in game, it makes sense that you should be able to do that anyway. You know, like to and in the third edition, you know, if you had two wizards, they could swap their spell books and then, you know, duplicate them that way if they had, you know, spells that they'd overlap.
Right.
But I never really had a problem with it. You know, like, yeah, like one of the wife playing a fighter, she could try to learn, you know, spend weeks or months learning all the spells.
Oh, it takes, you know,
and
then
the combat, she won't. It could take, well, you got to like do it for at least a week, I think, then make a check. It might be a month, I forget. In second edition, I changed the way the formula works.
Mm-hmm.
But it does. It's not just like, oh, I'll just spend a day trying to learn it. No, you got to take a while and then make an arcana check, which, you know, fighters typically don't have. So they're probably going to fail it anyway. And then they got to put more points in arcana to try it again later. That's the whole thing.
So in most of my games, it wouldn't be that big of a deal because I don't give my players a lot of time.
No.
I tend to put a lot of pressure on them to do things. Things become urgent. Urgency is high in most of my games.
Right.
So, are you? Hold on 1 second. I thought I had one more question I want to ask him about. No, it's not. It's not a spell thing. Do you have? Any more magic related questions, Joe?
I don't think so. No. Okay. I do not.
David, should we expect in the second edition many changes to the magic system, or is it going to stay pretty constant? Or you're not ready to share that yet?
I'm getting rid of sustained spells, and I'm changing it so no spells have prerequisites anymore.
Oh.
Instead, I'm doing it where, like, let's say you learn Fireball. What Fireball does, so I guess there's a, what I've been doing now is there's a blinding flare spell, and that just flash a light blinds things, and then instead of making like a separate spell that does something different, there's a talent you can take that requires that you've mastered blinding flare that actually lets you do like a fire nova type thing. So now every base spell will have certain things, like almost like spell secrets, like your wizard found a way to modify that spell.
Yeah.
So I'm going that route instead, and then we're getting rid of the whole, you know, D&D divination, abjuration, evocation. That's all going away. The spell structures are going to be different now. Clerics are no longer an adventuring class because it doesn't make sense for clerics to go adventuring.
So if the cleric is an evangelist type of cleric, going adventuring would be like diametrically opposed to what they're supposed to be doing that way. And if they're supposed to be like tending their flock in town, also you're not doing that by going
adventuring. Yeah.
So either way.
My rationalization was, you know, hey, you're a cleric of D&D God Palor. The God has given you access to miracles, so go crawl around in some tombs and jungles killing skeletons and monkeys and stuff for gold, and then just spend it on magic items or whatever. That doesn't make sense to me what a god would be like. Yeah, that's why I gave you these powers.
Right.
So clerics exist, but they're not an adventuring thing. They're like, you know, you go to town and you can get blessings. They can, you know, there's like a whole list of different holy waters you can get. They're going to be more like that sort of thing. You know, you're going to want to donate to them. Players will have an incentive to actually be religious if you're not a cleric, because then you can actually try to pray for minor divine blessings. There's a whole system for that thing. Okay. I feel like that's going to make more sense.
Yeah, go to the temple, throw in some gold, and get some bonuses. That sounds cool. That sounds like a cool mechanic.
Not bad at all.
But even out on the field, you know, you can make a charisma check to try to pray to a god and maybe, you know, give yourself a damage bonus for like a few minutes or so in combat. If you fail though, you know, that's the god, you know, okay, well, you're on your own for a bit. So you're not going to spam it all the time. And you know, usually nothing will happen anyway, but it's something that players can do. And if you donate to temples, you do good things for that, you get a bonus on that prayer check as well. So again, players will have a reason to go to temples, donate, do stuff for the clergy there, things like that.
Get some reputation with this.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Mac Thompson seems worried about clerics being removed from play. He said,
I bet I know why he's worried.
Why?
Because where's the healing coming from?
Yeah.
You don't see that in our game, you don't need a cleric for healing. And the thing is, in Delver's first edition, you never need it anyway because of the vitality system and alchemical potions, which they're kind of spendy. They heal 1d6 wound points at a rate of like one per round. We're actually going to change that though. So now the more potion, I had this mechanic early on where the more potions you drink, you could poison yourself doing that too many times. So you don't want to guzzle back a six pack all day. But if you do the hit point system right, you don't actually need the cleric. And a lot of times when we have players playing clerics in our games, no one has the healing domain anyway. They go with war domain. They go with fire domain. You can't heal by default as a cleric anyway, so it didn't matter.
Oh, okay. Is there healing magic? I can't remember. Will wizards then have some healing magic, or is that not even going to be a thing?
No.
No healing. Interesting. Cool.
It's going to be built into like resting and drinking potions, essentially.
Resting, drinking potions, and then also, wizards, they won't have like direct healing, like, oh, I can just touch you and heal you, but they will have, like, if you're a earth-based wizard, like a Terraturgist, you can, rub some dirt in a talent to up your wound recovery, heal some, or hit yourself with stone skin. Yeah,
nice.
You can do stuff like
nice.
Some things will have those options. There's a wizard thing for fire magic called Cauterize the Wound, where you hit, fire damage, you can actually heal people in a roundabout way doing that. So it's, but there's not going to be a, I'm a wizard or a cleric, touch.
So as far as the alchemical potions, is that going to be something that the players do, or they usually have to buy them from NPCs or find them?
You can buy them and you can brew them, and there's a alchemical crafting skill. And then if you find certain components, you can actually, you can increase what the potions do. Like there's a vigor potion that gives you back vitality points. Well, if you certain special ingredients, you can actually make it so the vigor potion will restore your VP. And then if you go over the maximum, it's like an adrenaline rush almost. So there's ways you can enhance them.
Oh, okay. I'll be honest, David, I've not read all of Dungeons and Delvers. I've been focusing now more on Horde Wars, but Dungeons and Delvers just sits there calling to me every time I walk by, and Joe wants to slap me in my face because we haven't played yet.
But, it's too big of a book not to play.
It's beautiful. I love that book. But
I send you guys a starter adventure if you want to play it that way, so you don't have to even think about anything. You can just run it.
Well, I'll tell you, send it to me. That would be fabulous.
I might have already sent it. It's Escape from the Flesh Catacombs.
I have that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's going to link a question.
If you send it to Randy, he won't run it.
Like Joe would. If it's going to get run, I'm going to run it. So.
Well, Randy, there's no spell books in that adventure. So
yes.
He's going to love it.
Yes, David. All right. So, Flady asked earlier. And this connect, I wanted to ask you later, but I'm going to let Flady do it. Any chance of running a game of Delver's next Big Geek Con talking to me? And I said, David, what's the chance of you making the Big Geek Con this coming
December? Where is it located?
Saginaw, Michigan.
Michigan. Oh, it's like.
That's a long haul for you, isn't it? Yeah.
It is a long haul, especially because we know 40 chickens.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Four kids.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be a huge hassle.
Well, they can take care of the chickens.
We got to take two of them with us because they're too little to leave home here.
Right on. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll.
You crate your kids. Put a little dish there with food and another dish with water.
Well, we're hoping.
Well, they're not.
Hope we'll get them. They eat con soon.
They're too.
They were. The two little ones we did. We did cart them from Oregon to here, so they're not. That wouldn't be. They'd be used to a 4-day long trip, basically. But
right, that'd be tough.
Yeah, well, anyway, if you drive out.
We hope you can make it one day. We would love it.
When they're a little older, that would be much more likely. Once they're old enough to talk.
They're gamers too. Big GeekCon's family friendly, so they could come and play too. So. That wouldn't be a problem. Flady asks, is that Adventure Mage or the Flesh Catacombs? Is it available on BGE? I don't know.
Yes,
it is, sir. Yeah. So if
I think you turned somebody onto your dice pool game that's on Big Geek Emporium as well.
So it looks like, David, I'll be running Dungeons and Delvers at Big Geek Con this year. So I'm going to get in there and I'm going to do it. So I won't, I'm not sure I can do you justice, but I'll try. I will definitely run that game. Let's switch away from Magic for a second. I only got so much time. It's 7:10 your time. I'm not sure. Wow. You got 20 minutes, maybe?
At least 20 minutes. I could probably go a little further.
Good. I just don't want to push. I don't want to try to squeeze. I don't want to miss big ideas. But you talked about what about the combat situation? I read your action points situation, mm-hmm. and I feel like I like it. I worry that.
I feel like I like it too, but.
Right. Go ahead.
It seems a little complex.
That's what I was wondering about.
It's very fiddly.
But it's neat. I mean, in a sense, I love the idea where, so here's how it works, guys. I don't know if David's changed it, but you correct me. You get 6 action points per character. You talked about some optional ways you could do it. Oh, Iron Man says, we can eat 40 chickens at Big Geek Con, no problem. So just bring the chickens.
I'll bring the eggs. We got like... Mm-hmm. I think 80 eggs that we try to sell them. We try to give them away. We try to eat them, but nice. It's too much.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can have 40 chickens. I love eggs. I can eat a dozen eggs in one sitting, easy. But even me, I think eating that many eggs every day would eventually get old.
If I'm hungry, I could do 12 eggs. I love them. Okay, so anyway, with that system, so I'd be like, get 6 action points, and each a movement, a type of an attack, a charge. They all have these different things. You have tried that though before, right? So you just start the clock on a D6 and say your actions tell you where you go.
It wasn't the action point thing with the 6 points. That was something I thought of a while ago, and that would be if you played like the old Fallout games, they did a similar thing. Mm. The new thing I thought of when you were talking about combat made me go like, "Oh wait, what about this idea?" Is that you roll like a D6 for initiative, and then you know players start at like, let's say they get a 3, the monsters get a 2, so they start at 3, monsters get 2. Every action has a cost, so I'm assuming my sword that could be like 5 points. So you know you start at 3, you act on count 8.
Yes.
You cast a spell that could have a cost of like 13 or whatever. Like, and the only reason I wanted to do that was because that way you avoid the idea of something that's bugged, you know, me and my players since second edition at the very least, is that the idea like that you can move attack or you can double move, but you can't double attack or anything. And I remember in third edition, a player, he hated that so much that what he did in combat was he played a rogue or a bard or something. And so he hits a monster. And he says, can I make another attack? DM says, no, that's not in the rules. And he goes, okay, fine. I'm just going to run a circle around it. Run a circle around it. And just to show the absurdity of the fact that why can't, and that's, you know, if he runs a circle around, that's enough time to make another attack. And I get there's a balancing reason, but I feel like there's a way you can fix that. And that would be the point system is the idea of that, well, if you want to just make an attack and not move, well, you can act again sooner later on. And also, this way you could actually do the thing where, oh, I'm the evil wizard's going to cast a spell, we can now interrupt it, which you usually can't do in D&D because, well, at least in third edition, not because most spells have one action. So here's my evil spell. Unless you read it in action to hit him while he was doing it, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and if they had combat casting, that could be negated. Well, no, you could ready it. What about the only problem I saw with it was it reminded me a little of Hackmaster 5e's
Hackmaster system
where you're counting. It's cool in concept, but I just keep, just like you, David, I kept thinking, man, this could get, I mean, analysis paralysis can be hard enough for some folks. This could really bog some of my players down.
You have to have folks that know the system. And I think with this thing, just like with Hackmaster, when I was trying to keep track of everybody's, because I ran a kind of a test of it, if I kept track of everybody's initiative and when they can go, that's really tedious. But I think with that kind of system you just described, with this Hackmaster thing, David Gwill's thing, each player has to keep track of their own position in the whole scheme of things.
Someone in Bruce Lombardo's Discord, he actually suggested creating like a kind of a clock thing that you could just kind of run the players around different counts and then have them act then. I don't know what he specifically meant by that, but it was, he just said like, you know, make like a clock thing. And so I'm just thinking like, you know, you have like little dice or pegs. That's this guy's dice. I'm going to do something 5 counts. So you move them 5 counts around it. And then, you know, everyone moves their guy and then you just kind of go in a circle. that might avoid the idea of having to keep track of like, oh, I'm initiative count 87 now. We're on initiative count 110 because it's been going on for a while. And
yeah, well, that too.
The way Hackmaster does it is every, I think they go up to a minute, and then it just goes over. It just you go up to 60 seconds at the most, and then you start over again. At one, but I think that the desire for that gets way into simulation territory, and I think for some of us, you get too far into simulation territory, it kind of ruins the table experience.
It can also, it's a game, and I accept that, and you know, there's also abstractions like how, oh, I get stabbed a dozen times or whatever. There should be a lot of infections and organ damage or whatever, and you don't want to, you know, deal with that. Armor is another issue where, like, we have it so plate armor is, like, DR10 now, and you can roll over that to bypass it, and honestly, that doesn't make any sense in real life because that's not how plate armor would work.
No.
However, it's a game, and you don't want to have a guy in plate armor who's, like, basically invulnerable, except to, like, big monsters. So, you know, we're just going to make it so plate armor is clearly very beneficial to have, but it's not quote-unquote game-breaking. The simpler combat solution I found, though, is just to give everyone one action in the sense that, like, you can attack, that's your turn. You want to shoot, loose an arrow, that's your turn. You want to move, that's your turn. Mm-hmm. That avoids, you know, oh, I can do two moves or one move, and, you know, you can just attack and you're done. And then a charge attack would be you can move and then attack, but you're at a defense penalty for a while. That way, you know, it's not just like, I'm going to go attack the orc, walk over there, and I'm just going to stand here now because I can only move. You could instead charge into combat and then do that.
With combat, did you, in Dungeons and Delvers, is there a way to dispel, to stop a wizard from getting a spell off, or they are, or not? Can you interrupt spells, or is that not a thing? I don't recall.
You can if, but this is where you would have to. We have opportunity attacks because opportunity attacks, they make sense because if there's a wizard right in front of me who starts moving his hands and stuff, it doesn't make any sense for my fighter to go, well, it's not my turn. I wish it was, but it's not. No, okay, I'm going to punch him or whatever. That the third edition thing made a lot of sense to me, and I don't find opportunity attacks very cumbersome or confusing, so we kept them in. You could ready an action as well, and it's something like if you take damage while casting a spell, you got to make constitution check, 10 plus damage suffered, otherwise it's gone, it fizzles out because you gotta, yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. What aspects of combat are there, aspects of combat that are going to change? Have you changed the initiative system in second edition? I assuming you're not going with the action points, you just said probably not.
No, I want to. It sounds really cool concept. It sounds like, oh, it makes perfect sense. It fixed everything. The only thing we're changing is because in first edition, we do the you can double move and then do whatever, but we're going to change it to you get one thing. So if you're going to cast a spell, you can't move. You got to focus your magic energy, direct it, shape it, whatever. So you can't run around 30 feet and then do that. And then a lot of spells actually cost two or more actions. So you can suffer drain to reduce that, though, so that's going to adjust things. So you actually could, you're more likely to interrupt spells now or get interrupted, unless, you know, you want to gamble more drain to reduce that.
Oh, I think I really like that. I don't know where I stand, but I know I want the games simplified from a utility standpoint. I don't really care how complex it is behind the screen for the player. The player can have all kinds of buttons and knobs and stuff to move around to make their character, but I want the actual playing of the game to be smooth. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
You could do a system of combat where, like, oh, okay, I'm gonna attack the guy, hit location, damage the arm, make a con save to see what that actually entails, all this crazy stuff. But I thought about doing, because you guys had mentioned an injury system before, like, okay, you get hurt, you take a penalty. I thought of that too, and then thought, well, no, because if they're fighting orcs and goblins, they're going to die like in one or two hits. Do I really, as a DM, want to go, okay, that orc's negative one from pain or whatever, that guy's negative two? No, they're just going to die next hit anyway. What's the point?
Right.
Yeah, I'm torn a little bit myself. I like there to be some viable options apart from trading punches for fighters. So how far down that rabbit hole do you go, and how complicated do you make to satisfy that kind of craving on one person's part?
Well, our fighter class, you can get exploit talents, which let you make an attack roll. And then if you roll high enough, you get to make a free trip attack. You get to make a free disarm attack. You get to make a free, you could, you know, grab them and try to hold them back. And then there's also ones that, you know, they have bleeding wounds now. They're stunned for a little bit. You can push them around. So we did, because third edition, you know, a lot of those trip things, they're lame. No one wanted to do them. So we decided, well, take trip attack as a talent. Now, if you roll high enough, you get an attack, do your damage, and then, oh, try to trip them for free.
And that emulates a little bit like you see in fighting in movies. Fighters aren't constantly tripping each other, but a guy gets a good hit and goes, oh, crap, I knocked that guy off balance. Then he sweeps his leg. You know, that's better. I think that's better.
Well, that's also, you know, where we went with a flavor-first approach. Well, how would we model combat in a more dynamic way where different things happen? You get a good hit in, you know, maybe you can push him back, or you hit him really well and you can knock the weapon out of their hand. That's, we try to model that.
Right. Cool. I don't know. I have no more questions on combat or game exactly, but I'm going to move into our last phase of questions. I don't know if Joe has more he wants to ask about gamey stuff, because I want to talk more about the hobby in general and get some of David's thoughts.
Well, part of the blog post was also writing those was a, you know, you guys were asking about, you know, how to do combat stuff. That was part of my way of saying, well, here's something you might think about doing for your game. So I'm curious, you writing about your game, you know, how are you designing things? Are there any things that you would do differently? You know, you're making the game you want to play that you always wanted. Mm-hmm. What are you changing?
Well, I'll be honest with you, David. I'm stuck in limbo right now. We had started over a year ago on Mudsword, and we got a version of it that I was liking, but we started thinking it's not all that different. You know, I'd mentioned the spell secrets, and a lot of it was loosey-goosey stuff. And now I think what I'm going to do, and joking, we're working on the world part eventually, but I'm stepping back, and I want to run Horde Wars. I want to run Dungeons and Delvers, and I want to run Castles and Crusades, because I've run enough basic D&D now, OSE, that I kind of I remember how it was, the things I liked, a lot of the things I didn't like. And I want to see, look at your game closer, because it's not got a fair shot in these other two. And then I think, because I don't know if I know what I really want yet. I mean, when I'm playing, I go, I don't like that. I want something like this. I don't like this. I want something like that.
Well, what do you not like about, like, Castles and Crusades? What is something that bugs you about that?
Oh, I haven't played it yet. That's what I mean. It's on my list. That's what I'm saying. So I've got Horde Wars, which I'm diving into. Dungeons and Delvers is going to be next, and then it's going to be Castles and Crusades. And I want to see the things. I want to look at those games. Oh, I like this. I don't like that. Like I said, right now, all I can really tell you is this much. I want an initiative system that's super simple. Fact. That's what I got to have. It's got to be quick. I don't want to play around with initiative. I don't like third edition's chart system where I'm constantly ever changing everybody's position after, you know, I know it's cyclical, but you got to put everybody in order and then do that.
I don't like that either, because
it's not horrible, but it's not what I want.
What I actually did last edition game I ran was I would take all the characters' character sheets. I would roll initiative ahead of time. I'd do like 4 to 6 sets of initiative scores. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, you go in the room, there's skeletons. I would just roll a d6. Okay, you go. Yeah, and so I would just roll that d6 every time. And then every session I'd do a whole new set, so it'd keep it fresh. But the thing that we just do is roll a d20, and we just do it by sides. Who gets the highest? Okay, your side goes, and then the other side goes. That way it's because I don't want to go, you know, okay, the dragon rears back and everyone roll initiative. Let's spend 5 minutes tallying things up and sorting. No, that deflates the tension and the excitement.
That was one thing I forgot. I'm glad you brought that up. So you roll, and when the players go, they go any order they want, correct?
They pick their order. Yep.
That's interesting.
Well, it makes it, like you're saying, you want something fast, so it makes it fast, because then it's like, you roll someone, that's one of the players rolls, doesn't matter who, and then, okay, boom, who's doing what? That way the tension doesn't just kind of go, and then you got to...
Yeah, you know, and those players that think too long, they're going to have to wait till after Joe, because Joe's going to be jumping up right off the bat. He's like, I want to go.
Yeah, you could do it like that, you know? Yeah, yeah. Joe's ready to go.
Yeah, let him do it. Well, Joe be like, I'm going to hit the guy. I'm going to cast a spell. Wait a minute, I want to do this first. You know, people are, and that's good, because Joe is one of the guys that... at my table, to give him a little bit of credit, I don't want his head to get too big, he makes stuff happen. You know, he's one of those players, like, he's not fond of, like, sitting and spinning for very long. You know?
For better or worse.
Yeah, for better. Yeah, the stone sits on the pedestal. Everybody stares at it and goes, Joe goes, I grab it. That's what he does.
There you go.
I'm making something happen. I'm an adventurer.
You got to instigate things. You got to keep it going. Because I've done with players like that where it's like, you know, there's a door. And what do we hear? What do we see? What do we smell? Can we see through cracks? It's like, oh, my God, it's a door. Oh, what are you guys doing? What are you doing?
Joe's like, so, I'll open the door.
Everybody looks at the door like a cow at a new fence. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but David, I can't really give you much because, honestly, I've kind of – I put the rules part to the side. So initiative is one. It's got to be fast. Another thing is a spell system. I can't say that I hate Vancian, but it just
it's pseudo Vancian. It doesn't work like that in the books.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. But the way D&D does is not my favorite. But spell points are interesting, but – I need to see your drain system. I need to see how the other systems work, and I might find it even more enticing. So I think spell points and the initiative that's quick. I'm currently fond of Horde Wars version of initiative, where you roll initiative, and whoever gets the highest, they go first, and you go around the table clockwise. That works really nicely at the table. But that's all I know, because I've kind of gone back to the drawing board. So I wish I could tell you more, but I can't. I can't tell you yet. I'm not where I need to be at all, so...
Well, and it sounds like that if your spells are going to be largely like the names, division of spells, levels, that's all going to be the same. You just want to make a spell point thing. That really does sound like you could just say, here's my Castles and Crusades spell point handbook thingy to just get rid of all the spells, but here's them spell pointed. And that doesn't sound like it needs a whole new game for that. Same thing with initiative. That's also easy. Unless they have, like, you know, third edition had different initiative feats and abilities, which those would be rendered useless in our, because the way we're doing it, you don't use dex or anything like that. It's just straight d20 roll. So dex has no factor in that.
Yeah. I want to answer a question real quick before I go to this last part. Mac Thompson says, yeah, except that can end up punishing the player who might play well, but needs a little longer to figure out his or her actions. Now, yeah, I mean, a little longer is one thing, Mac. I agree. I'm talking about people that just stare at things forever. I mean, at some point in combat, you have to do something. And once you get past 30 seconds or a minute in the middle of a fight with orcs, just do something. I've had players who just always want to do the most maximal thing every single round. I'm like, don't do that. It's just taking too long. But I get where Mac's coming from. I don't want to punish
players.
It's
not like we steamroll people if they take
more than a second. Yeah, Joe wouldn't just, sorry, Mac, you're too slow. You can't go first.
No.
And Mac's like, well, I'm thinking of this idea. And Joe's like, okay. It's just if you're sitting there and spinning your wheels forever, he'd be like, come on, somebody do something.
And that was actually a fourth edition D&D thing. Because, you know, you'd play with, when we first started playing it was the minis and the maps. And it's like, okay, if I go here and I shift to there, it would drag combat out forever because players would look like a chessboard. And then I actually started running it without the map or minis, and that sped things up a lot because now no one's trying to do the weird little dance around monster thing and getting in position and stuff. It's like
that gets so annoying.
Gotta
avoid an AOO.
Or the character types that can cast any spell of the level that they know. So they pull out the player's handbook every time it's their turn. And which one of these 50 spells am I going to cast this time?
Or which one of these 100 spells out of 3 different books am I allowed to do now?
Yeah. That's no good.
No.
And that the problem with that is partially the player, but also partially 5,000 spells, which is kind of stupid.
It's partially the system for making that rule in the first place. And then, you know, you get a new book with, because I know there was a cleric. The cleric had access to every spell of a level in third edition. So I'm going to, you know, I got a new book. Okay, I'm going to pray for spells out of, you know, player's handbook, complete divine, whatever. And it just gets on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, that was actually worse than the wizard. Because the wizard still, he could like a spell out of another book, but he's like, he just picks them and that's what he gets. And he knows them. But a cleric, he had to know all the spells that were, or they felt like they had to know them all. And I was like, dude, just pick a few. Just go. Any other questions on the system? I'm sorry, David, I didn't give you a good answer, but I'm just not sure where I'm at right now. I'm kind of...
And the thing is I'm very curious to see what you've been doing with it.
not that much, though. Okay. I can say when we were playing OSE, I was doing a lot of changes. I mean, I was a fan. I used one saving throw. I like just a saving throw. I used things like a lot of freeform stuff I was doing in play just to sort of test things as we went.
Well, that's a good start.
Changed initiative up a couple of times.
And the thing,
that's a good start. And with Delvers, it did take us like 3 years from, you know, running fourth edition as is, getting rid of almost all of it, trying different things out. So you've been on it for a year. That's not, you know, an abnormal length of time. So don't feel like, oh, you're taking too long doing it. Just keep at it. And then, you know, if you're running OSC and you don't like it, you know, make a note. I hate this. I hate that. And that will give you a baseline. And then you can look at it, you know, and go, okay, well, I don't like all this stuff in here. Does this warrant a new game?
Right.
And that's how I would approach it.
Yeah, I think that's probably how we're going to go. And I don't imagine we're going to have a nice, big, awesome, thick book like yours when we're done.
You don't need a big, awesome, thick book. You need the game that you want to play.
Right, exactly. But we'll see. Who knows? I may end up getting one it may end up be more than I think. I don't know till I get there. So,
And I can lay it out for you if you want.
Yeah. All right.
It'll be bullet points, the game.
That's what Joe wants. There's bullet points all the way through. Yeah.
Maximum literary efficiency.
I use a lot of bullet points too, so it breaks things up. I agree.
Okay. It is 7:30. I'm not trying to get rid of you. I just don't want to keep you too long. I have a couple more questions, but they're not directly game design related. Do you have time for them or not?
Yes.
Okay.
No one's come to get me. I haven't got a message saying, hey, I need you to wrangle our daughter. So,
we're going to get into the opinion thing. So what are your thoughts on the state of the hobby of TTRPGs right now? What are your thoughts in general?
When you say the hobby, you mean like the traditional
tabletop
side of it, or like are we doing story game crap in here, or what?
You can mention that if you wish. It's up to you.
Most of my RPG stuff gets filtered through Twitter and a bit of there's a OSR group on Facebook, so. Mostly all I hear about is like, okay, you know, I hear about Horde Wars, which is fine, and then, you know, Horse Girl and stuff like that. So,
wow.
I don't know the state of it anymore because, like, I used to be a part of G+ groups, so the overall picture is, I think it feels like it's been the same. You have people that, you know, they're passionate about making games, and they just want to focus on the game side of things, and people that are making their weird fetish stuff or propaganda things, you know, buy our game, not because you're going to play it, but because we have a bunch of ugly lesbian art or whatever. And I feel like that's been the way it's been since like 2014, maybe.
Okay.
So I think it's still got the same mixture of people that actually want to make games because they want to make games and people that want to make games because they want money and attention and for people to tell them you're a good person.
Yeah, no, virtue signal seems, our hobby seems rife with that. I noticed you use a phrase like in your blog a lot, what you call trash games.
Vapidware trash games.
And you put one of the games I like on there, man, ICRPG. But when I say I like it, I've really had a good time with it. But you talked about Mork Borg and several others. What was the more recent one? Troika. I had about 2 minutes with Troika. It wasn't my favorite. But my question.
Well, I can tell you why I don't like Index Card, and I only I don't own it, so it's because of Professor Dungeon Master did a review on it, and someone posted that in the Facebook group, and I watched it, and it sounded really stupid, really stupid. Like he was praising the these cards. Yeah. That have like terrain features on them, and just him trying to justify their existence. Like they're so amazing, and it's because you can just lay them out, and you got a room, and it's what you can lay them out, and you have a town, and then you can just rearrange them to another town. That's not a town. You just put some cards down. What is this town? Who lives there? What's going on? And you could put your guy on a minecart. You're on a minecart chase, and I'm like, that's retarded. that's so dumb. And then he's talking about how the difficulty is like, it's like 15 or something. It's always 15, except well, when you change it. Okay, so it's not always 15. You can change it.
It scales. The what they'll do, at least, okay, here's my experience. The game master that ran me through it, for each scene, situation, combat, whatever, he would put a little card out, and it would have a DC on it. And that would be maybe 13. And then hard would be two higher, and easy would be two lower. There's rules for when you had to roll which one.
So with the scene, so the
environment has a challenge.
It sets the challenge level, not the monster itself.
Right.
How powerful they
are. And that is why I think that is phenomenally stupid. Like we're fighting goblins. Well, the scenario thing says DC, so they're all DC 13. It makes you think of fourth edition, where like if you play fourth edition D&D, you fought a level 1 goblin, it was level 1, but level 5 you fought level 5 goblins. So all their numbers went up and all their damage went up. So it didn't your level up, it didn't matter because you're level 10. There's level 10 goblins now. Oh, okay, so we're playing like Skyrim where every monster just levels up with you. So what was the point of leveling? So that was really dumb. And then the characters, you didn't level up, you got more gear. And I remember the fighter class, like, oh, his gear is he gets like a rock he can stick on a sword and it gives you like an accuracy bonus or whatever. And my thought, that's dumb because why can't I just stick rocks on all my weapons? Why do I have to have a special super, what's this rock? Is this a rock? And it was really dumb. And then you had coins you could trade. Like, you actually had these coins that you could give to other players to, I forget what they did, but it made me think of Super Dungeon Explorer, which is a board game where you get princess coins that you can use for extra lives. And this whole thing seems so metagamey and stupid. And I wonder, what was the point of it? You take D&D and you just go, okay, you don't level up. You just get magic items. But they're not magic items. Randy, you got a scabbard. It's just a scabbard, but if you draw your sword out of it, you get plus one to hit. Well, I don't know. It's just a dumb item gimmick thing. You're fighting a dragon, it's DC 13. Not because the dragon's... It's because the scenario's like that, and I'll change it later, and he'll become magically harder to hit or whatever, and everything's level DC 15, and you guys all know what it is, so you know exactly how to hedge your bets. And that just seems really dumb.
But you could argue this, though, David. I'll play some defense on this particular game. I'm going to. I've had fun with it, but that could be the group dynamic. And I get where you're coming from. I think that in third edition, if you read a module or ran an adventure, there would be an encounter that would have a... If you looked at those monsters and those challenges, they weren't often too far from each other in terms of difficulty. They all kind of fit the scene. So you could argue in that scene, this is a challenge. And if you scale dragons through your game like D&D does, you have a weaker dragon for lower level characters, a medium level dragon for medium characters, and a tougher dragon for higher level characters.
That's bad design because this actually is with Melissa. When she started running her adventures, she was going to do an adventure where you travel to like basically another continent, and there was going to be a castle and a jungle giant. Who basically he somehow had like stronger a bunch of intelligent monkeys into being his like servants, or whatever. So it was called the monkey castle thing or whatever. And she wanted to run it for us as a play test, and we made level 3 characters. And she said, "Hey, I want to put a shambling mount in the game, but it's like level 7. How do I do level 3?" And I said, "You don't." Because if you de-level all your stuff, if you de-level everything, this is where I think 5th edition players came from. The game's got to be balanced, because if we can't just kick in the door and kill everything, then that's not fair for some reason. And so, no, if you run an adventure and everything's like all level appropriate, well, then what's the point of the levels anyway? It's just dumb adventure design. You got to have like hard stuff in there.
We had hard stuff. There was hard stuff in ICRPG, for sure. I mean, because not every encounter was the same. It's not that every adventure, this is a level 2 adventure, so all encounters are 2. The DM gauges each scene as to what challenge he wants that scene to be. And to me, that's not horrible, but I also think the leveling, the part we even mentioned while we played it, I don't see this game being a long-term game. It's definitely short window of play.
Yeah, and I don't like games like that either, where it's like there's no longevity to it, because if I want to do a one-shot game, well, I got D&D and everything else I can do one-shots with. I don't need another game that's like, oh, it's D&D, but the levels don't matter. Only your items matter, and your items make no sense because you have like a fancy hat, and that's plus whatever to charm for some reason because it's a fancy hat that you can't buy anywhere for some reason, or it's a rocky slap on your weapon, or it's they had like a metal shield, and it like you can't have a solid metal shield that would be absurdly heavy. There was a lot of stuff like that where I was like, this just seems so dumb. It just seems really dumb.
Bruce Lombardo wanted to chime in for his every weekly visit. He said, we should do a conversion kit for advanced bestiary for Dungeons and Delvers. Don't level up any monsters, just make them scarier. Mm-hmm. He always has to say something.
Oh, yeah. I think I tried to find it, but I can't find the advanced bestiary. Bruce, where can I find this advanced bestiary that you've just brought up?
It's a magical tome. He swears you can get it. I think he's kidding us. Now, I've seen the book. I know it exists. So
we've seen a book.
Yes. Right. I think I know the source of ire for a game like ICRPG.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is super vague. The whole game is based on vagaries.
Not as vague as Troika.
Troika. It's a game where you can go to it makes you think of like a hodgepodge of Planescape and Spelljammer. You get in these you can get in these golden sailed barges that are never explained in the book. You can travel, Randy, to other planes of existence. Imagine if Planescape was like, hey Randy, it's a game where you can go to the planes of existence. Oh, how do I do that? Oh, we're not gonna tell you how to do that.
No, we'd be like, that's
you figure
what
it out.
That's what I That's specifically why I bought Planescape.
and then none of the gear has a price. So I'm gonna buy. Oh, and there's no treasure. The adventure in the back, which was really dumb, where it's like you're at a hotel, you're trying to get to your room. That's the adventure. You're trying to get to your room, and you can get there's one piece of treasure I remember that you can get. It's like 2d6 pence or whatever. But okay, what am I gonna spend that on? Nothing has prices.
Magic Bean, our buddy Ben, don't take it personal. He ran that adventure for us, the hotel one. We played in it. It was crazy town. we did have some fun, but I'm not going to say David's fully wrong. Troika is not up my alley. I see RPG I can handle, but I would never run it, but I would play it. To me, it's tongue-in-cheek. Let things kind of go loose goosey. I get it. If it's not your jam,
If it was a board game, because like I played Zombicide. I played Zombicide Black Plague, the fantasy version of it, where you can get items that you can get food that you can eat for experience points, and I think even drink water for experience points at some point. Super Dungeon Explorer. It's a fantasy. It's a JRPG beat 'em up board game where you can punch potions and hearts out of monsters to heal yourself. It's a board game, and I can accept that craziness. In a role-playing game where nothing in it actually justifies any of these things existing, it just seems like a huge disconnect to me. Like, imagine if you were on D&D, Randy, and I said, hey, Randy, my fighter's got a longsword. I'm going to tie a rock to it. I should get plus one to hit. You'd be like, what are you on about, dude? Oh, but an index card, you can do that.
But
they were gonna let that rock thing go because it wasn't even explained as a magic rock. It's just a normal rock.
No, it's not quite that. I mean, somebody told you the wrong thing, but I laugh because David, you're really close. You're around it. I feel what you're saying, but I think it's a little better. It's got a little more. It's definitely got more rules that make sense than Troika. There's no comparison. But I also think that there's a place for it. Campaign-wise, Troika is no way, but ICRPG, it's limited. I mean, you can only play for so long, I think. It would run out in terms of options because it's just a list of things. And it's kind of fun. When you roll a 20, you get a special experience point thing. And once you get 10 of those, something cool happens. But, I mean, it's but pretty.
You could put
crazy.
That into a. I could put that into a D&D game and just run D&D.
Right.
And then there, my level up actually matters. You know, I my fighter, he got better at fighting, not because he started gluing rocks all over himself, but because he got better at hitting things.
Gluing rocks. That'll be a magic item in Mudsword. The glued rocks.
Mud sword. The mud sword, it needs to have the titular mud sword. That needs to be the most powerful in the game. It needs to be an artifact.
A dancing Vorpal that works on command at all times. Plus five death.
I think the problem with a lot of these games like this is people who don't like gamey games want the games to be, it's a story game instead of a gamey game. And they want to take out almost all of the rulesy stuff because they think that's better. And it may be better for them. They may love that kind of stuff.
Right. Some people do. They to them, that's it's more about the
too many abstractions.
Role playing and everything's abstract.
Too many abstractions to the point where like if Troika, if you're gonna like, oh, I fell. Well, what do I do for falling damage? I'm gonna hold my breath. How do I what rule is there for that? Like how long can I do that? Because and you could say, well, how long can you hold your breath for? A good rule would say, you know, give you a baseline. So like, you know, you could figure out, you know, how long people hold their breath. Well, there is like an average time. You could use that as a baseline and extrapolate from there. How long can you go without water? How long can you go without food? Those should be in the game in case that happens. Because if someone has to make a ruling on the fly, do you know how long people go without water on average?
I think you can. Can't you last like 3 or 4 days and that's it?
The rule is
depends.
It really depends. But the thing is like it's like 3 minutes with no air, 3 days with no water, 3 weeks with no food, or something like that. It's like 3-3-3.
Gotcha.
But it's a generalization. Yes, you know, obviously the environment can change that, but and for falling things like that need to be in the game as well, in case you know, because an index card, how if I fell, how what damage would I take? How does that work? And you know, you maybe make a rule on the fly, but why can't you just be in the game as well? Just so players can go, okay, well. You can make a rule in any way, and then later read like, oh, guys, I found that rule. It was actually in the book, whatever, everything's fine. But those are some very basic things that I see missing from a lot of these other games.
Yeah. Specifically falling damage, I would imagine in ICRPG it's there, and Troika it's probably most definitely not. So, but anyway, I knew that'd get David going. I knew he loved him a little ICRPG. Oh, anything else you want to ask David? Because we got him. We've had him for an hour and 45 minutes. That's awesome. No, an hour and 15.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Thereabouts.
Hey, do you want to tell anybody? You want to shill anything? Do it, man. Tell people to buy your stuff.
No, Dungeons & Delvers on Biggie Comporium.
Yes. It's
over there.
All right. Cool. Well, David, thanks for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Any other game design specific things that you guys want to pick my brain on before I go?
Oh, give me a second, because actually I might have had one more, because I highlighted something in your combat early on. I'm on the website, and I had picked something else up.
How long do you mentally harangue yourself to figure out a rule? Right? So I want this rule, and you're like, I like this and this and this. And how much do you beat yourself up to get the rule right? Or do you like say, I like this, I'm gonna put this rule down, we're gonna play it and iterate from there?
So when you guys talk about combat and I thought of the action point thing, that didn't take very long. I was thinking like, okay, how would this work? Ooh, you know, everything has a point cost. Okay, that's kind of cool. And so I thought of that. It didn't take me very long to think of that. And I think I put it in the chat, you know, hey, here's my idea, and then I flesh it out a little bit later. The bad part comes where when I'm writing those blog posts and I'm, here's my idea for this wound level thing where you can get hit and you don't take hit point damage, you take wound level damage. And then as I'm writing it out and because I thought about it, and then I talk about like, well, here's what it's getting complicated. Then sometimes I realize, oh wait, this won't actually work. And then I've just wasted an hour writing a blog post that I can't even use because it's like, oh crap. And then I'll talk to Melissa about this stuff, and then sometimes she'll ask questions, and I'll go, wait, no, it actually will work now. And so that's what's happened before. So it could take like a couple hours, and if it doesn't work, I mean, I've had that happen plenty of times where I think of an idea, and then I go, it doesn't make any sense, it's too complicated, and I'll leave it in I have a bunch of Google Docs. I leave my stuff in there, and then I can come back to it later if I think about it later, like, wait, maybe it will work this time. So don't make myself up too much, not anymore anyway. And it can take, you know, maybe 10, 30 minutes, an hour or so, just to try to get in my head. But then the playtest is the hardest part, because I got to run it organically. So, because if you just do like a combat stress test, They go in the dungeon, fight some monsters. That's not how the game actually works. That can give you, I guess, like a false positive on, oh, it works, but then, oh, it actually doesn't work because that's not how the game plays.
Right, because you have to play it over time.
You got to do it over time.
Scenarios.
And also, you know, the idea, like, you're going to go into a dungeon, explore some rooms, maybe fight a few things, you know, oh, we go in there, fight some things, get back to rest. Now, does that mean the armor damage reduction is too high now because everything's too easy? Oh, but we did the 5 encounters in a row stress test. It wasn't. Well, that's not how it works.
Right. Okay, I guess I do have a question.
Shoot.
Are you keeping the long rest, short rest deal?
No. We're probably getting rid of vitality points.
Oh, really?
Well, okay, so short rest. People hate it. Actually, why do you hate it? I should ask that before I say anything.
Okay, short rest, long rest. So the reason I hate it really is how a lot of DMs implement it, which is you never get a long rest.
Who would do that?
Okay, so maybe Randy. So in Delvers, I see a lot of people don't like short rest, long rest because they think of 4th edition and 5th edition, where long rest is all your stuff back. It all comes back. Everything's magically healed. And then short rest was spend healing surges or hit dice to regain hit points.
Right.
In our game, it's you get 3 per day for short rest, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour. It takes progressively longer to you know, oh, I'm getting tired. I got to rest a little longer to heal up for it. Short rest only heals vitality points, and you have very few vitality points. Long rest is incremental wound point recovery, like 1 per level or something like that. So you usually can't just max out your health, and the short rest is just you get that little vitality buffer that keeps coming back. So that's another reason why healing magic wasn't so necessary.
So I like kind of the idea of the short rest because it's like taking a breather. I got to take a breather.
Yes,
I'm going to sit down. That's where you get your
vitality points back.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I like that, but sometimes when they talk about the short rest and long rest, and they give the DM the latitude, which, you know, it's your game. You run it the way you want. I get that. But,
you know, put spell books in.
Right. So a right long on. Rest mechanic about. Often works in such a way that you could say, yeah, you've been, because it's more of a story beat idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get a long rest, even though it's been a whole month since you've been kicking around for a month, and you still, the DM's like, yeah, you don't get a long rest because it's not good for the story. Even though you've rested in an inn, you've slept in a bed, you've eaten lots of food, and you know,
actually, in Delvers, that stuff increases the wound point recovery. So players have an incentive to rest in inns and eat good food and stuff like that. You just got to rest for like 6 hours at a block, and then you get the long rest benefit. So if you're walking for a month, you had to have long rested it, you know, unless the characters didn't sleep and literally didn't stop doing anything for a month.
Yeah, but some of these games that use the long and short mechanic, they make the long rest part vague enough so that the DM can just say,
oh, that's dumb.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's
13th Age has got it. I was talking about 13th Age, and I agree with him to an extent. I don't think doesn't fifth edition actually call a long rest 8 hours?
Maybe. For us, long rest is just, did you sleep for the night? You long rested. You're good. Don't worry about it.
Right. So I get that maybe sleeping overnight in the dungeon probably isn't a good long rest because, you know,
you get a whatnot. You get a wound recovery penalty. So you regain wound points slower in a dungeon environment. Yeah, but if you're a ranger, you get the Great Outdoors talent. You don't suffer that anymore. So rangers can long rest anywhere they want, and they're fine.
Right.
Oh,
Randy, there's no ends in my game.
Henceforth. And no clerics unless Mac Thompson plays. Yeah, Mac's like he's hating. Now, let's clarify. There's clerics. There are clerics in 1st edition Dungeons and Delvers. But in 2nd edition,
there are clerics and druids.
And they can heal in 1st edition.
If you're a cleric and you take the healing domain, or you're a druid and you take Circle of the Sun, I think. Those are gateway talents that unlock healing abilities. So if you don't take those, you cannot heal at all. The idea is that you would play a cleric and invent your god, and you know, say, my god, you know, he has this and that domain, and then you know, your god can have any amount of domains you want, but you have to spend a talent to get that domain anyway. So you, if your god is like seven domains, whatever, you still got to spend talents to get those anyway.
Okay.
So it didn't matter. You know, you can do whatever you want with that. But if your god's a healing god, well, if you take healing domain, you're good. If you don't, then you don't. The only exception is clerics can get a divine inspiration ability later that lets them temporarily gain access to different miracles. And those can be swapped out periodically. But otherwise, no, you got to spend the talents on it.
So in second edition, that won't be an option.
Yeah, clerics won't be an option. Clerics won't be an option. But we're also changing healing. We're getting rid of the short rest thing. That's going to be more, you know, fatigue is going to be a bigger deal.
Okay.
To deal with. And that's going to be a penalty to things if you're too exhausted. So you're going to still want to rest to undo your fatigue levels. And when you rest, you make a constitution check to see how many wound points you get. And so using like medicine kits, healing ointments, eating good food, those all boost your check to see how many wound points you get. So that's going to make wound recovery a little more unpredictable. And I think a little more, I guess, quote unquote, realistic. So, you know, if you're suffering from infections, poisons and stuff, those penalize the check. So you're going to, players will have, you know, incentives to go rest in civilization in a good inn and eat, you know, fresh food and things like that. Because right now, like in D&D, there's no there's costs for good food and good inn rooms, but what's the point? They don't do anything anyway.
I agree. That's always bugged me.
It just ends up being a money sink.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, that's again, you know, I want to make my own game. That's what I want. Well, that's something that always bugged me. Players have no reason to do these things.
Yeah.
I want to give players a reason to do it without overtly bogging the game down. Again, I don't want to do like hit location, injury checks for different parts of the body. I don't want to do that stuff. That's too out there for me.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I think, although I like the idea of second-by-second tracking of combat, I think it would play, the play of it would be too cumbersome.
Yeah.
I still want to try with my kids because, again, with my 12-year-old daughter, if she can hack it, then I'm just getting too old. That's me then. The mechanics sound, but if she's just like, what's going on? What am I doing? Then, okay, yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, David, I think we're about there, Joe. I got nothing else for him. But I soon will. I'm going to be picking his brain more. But David, thank you for being on tonight. We really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
Everybody, check out
the
Delvers available on Big Geek Emporium. And
you guys had a Merry Christmas.
Yes,
it was awesome.
Most absolutely, I did. And I hope you and yours enjoy the new year and take care of them girls. And you got a girl and a boy, right?
Two girls and two boys.
All right, a nice big family.
Nice little even split.
Hopefully in a few years, Big Geek Con will still be going on, and we'll get you over this way. Maybe one year, that'd be awesome.
It's your family's very representative.
What's that? What's that, Joe?
I talked over David. What did you say?
I was saying once the kids are more self-sufficient, then we can drive on up there without having to call them along if they don't want to come.
Right on.
I was just saying he has a very representative family.
He does. That'd be cool. It'd be great if they all came and played. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, all right, sir. Six people just from the one family.
That'd be cool.
You could just run a whole
six
game.
Tickets. Six tickets. We could have my daughter run a game.
Hopefully by then. I'm hoping in a few years maybe we can like give discounts for folks that run games. Hope we have a big enough show that we could do that.
Yeah, you'd have to get a little bigger. Good. But if it gets too big, it's going to... I don't know. I want it to be nice size. I don't want it to be 50,000 people.
No, I think there's little to no danger of that. Our man says be sure to bring the 40 chickens when you come.
Yeah. You got hungry men.
Bring a few of the
eggs.
All right.
Daughter's favorite one. She's pretty much has named them all, so
we'll
bring some of the choice ones.
There you go. All right, bud. Well, you have a good night, okay?
You too.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Have a good one.
Yep. Bye.
Later.
Okay, that was very cool. Good to talk.
Okay, now we can talk about him behind his back.
Finally, good night. I've been waiting to talk about him badly. So
I was going to remember when we first had the idea of having him on, but I was going to call the episode.
What?
David Gwill is wrong about everything. just to be funny, because
just to be funny, he's not. No, dude. I was going to say David seems like his game thoughts are like right up your alley, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
They are right up your alley. So we got to get Dungeons and Delvers to the table. You got to get 1E to the table before 2E's out. So because you know I'll buy it because I can't wait. So
right. But well, I think the less like 5th edition that it is, the better it will be.
Yeah. Patrick says, I'd love Big Geek Con to be big enough to turn a profit and pay for the big BGE servers. That would be cool. If we could have our cost for Big Geek Emporium and the podcast covered by the money we made at Big Geek Con, that would be cool.
Yeah, but if we do that every year, then I could just quit.
Joe could quit and just live on his computer.
Yeah, live on Big Geek Emporium money, which can't happen right now.
No. That would be some tightening your belt a lot.
Oh, sure. I would become skinny like I was when I was in high school.
Right, right. All right, dude. It's a little after 9. Do you want to call it or do you want to do our little short segment on we have left? Maybe tell folks to do something. We haven't told them to subscribe yet.
Yeah, we don't need to because Butchamoo is left without us telling him to do the things.
I know.
Because he said he was going to leave when we told him to do the things.
Okay. That's fine.
But, we can say we can do the things.
Subscribe.
Yeah. Subscribe, like, share, comment, follow, depending on what medium you are consuming the show on.
I am trying really hard to get on X more. I'm not succeeding. I'm going to be playing the Rifts game, I think, soon with the guys from Legion. They're talking about firing that game back up, so Nightlight will be there soon. Oh, nice. Well done. Armin says he gave away his PDF that he won last week for Horde Wars. Very nice. That's cool, sir.
That is very cool.
He ran last Friday like I did. I hope you're enjoying the game still, Armin. I am. I'm excited to run this coming week. I'm going to get my OSE campaign. Do it.
Just do it.
Just do it, says Patrick. Don't be wusses.
So if it got to like tens of thousands of people, right?
Right.
Where in the Tri-City area would we be able to hold such an event? It wouldn't be at the hotel we're doing it at now. You couldn't hold 10,000 people there.
Oh, no way. Dude,
not even 5,000.
If we got 500 people, we couldn't do it there.
No, we'd have to change venues easily.
Yeah, no way.
I'm not doing anything in Detroit.
Yes, you are.
No.
You're going
to
start
Saginaw is a big enough town for me to deal with. If it's Detroit, I will phone it in.
All right. Okay. Well, I think the chances are good that Big Geek Con could grow this year to maybe 50 or 60 people every day.
Okay, what's that banquet center? What's that banquet buffet center? Not buffet, but that banquet conference center that's in Essexville, the Grand. I wonder how many they can hold.
Yeah. Okay. So I must have said something that threw people off, and because Patrick, no, Legion of Myth is not done. He's not calling it quits. I was talking about I may be playing in a Rifts game again that I played with those guys earlier this year. We may be starting it up again soon. That right. was nothing about quitting. So Larry Elliott says the Dow Event Center.
Oh, okay. That's in this area.
Yeah. Oh, Patrick's saying he thinks Legion of Myth is on an extended hiatus. Oh, I didn't know. Okay. Maybe that's something I didn't know. Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
I didn't know. Yeah. I saw something that was said, a little clip that said saying goodbye. But I thought that was just like the end clip of the show.
Oh, well, crap. All right. I hadn't heard. That'd be a shame. I really like Legion of Myth. That's a shame. I'll still hang out with Maxo. He and I will play games together. That's cool. He's a good cat. Right. I want to get him. Oh, they made a goodbye video. Oh, really? Well, I better check that crap out. But I need to get Max to Big GeekCon. He needs to get here. Right. Oh, okay. Mr. Boivin clarifies. No, Legion of Myth was away for the Sunday stream. They're coming back soon. Okay. And about your request, Larry Elliott says the Grand has two areas to use. upstairs and downstairs, kid had sports banquets there. Okay, that could work. Meg Thompson, is Witchmer going to not be Defuhrer anymore by the time GeekCon starts? Need to plan appropriate route. yeah, I don't know. I got to
see that again.
Yeah. Sorry, too fast.
I don't know. I don't know how long the terms are. Are they still 4-year terms?
Or
yeah,
two? She won again, right? Which is
won again because people are stupid. People are stupid. Michigan was and still is a pile of crap. Because
of two cities.
Yeah.
It's the tale of two cities in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Let's send sick old people to be with other old people who aren't sick yet to make them sick and have everybody die. Yeah.
It cracks me up. We're going to stop politics for a minute because we can. It's our show. A buddy of mine is like talking about moving here. He's like, no, I'm not going to because it's Michigan. I'm like, yeah, 2026. I said, look, I can't believe that they have so many Dems in the offices. And a lot of my friends, because people I know in the region, there's a lot of conservative people here, dude. A lot.
Yeah, it's how the different districts are structured. When someone wins, they get to restructure everything to benefit their party.
Flady says, can we get the teleporter fired up and running? The drive can be brutal. Yeah, he's coming from a pretty good distance. So Flady and his brother, and we had a couple, I think another guy from the Philadelphia area. So yeah.
We used to be all on the teleporter invention.
Badly.
You know, we probably would have invented it by now,
right.
But we stopped talking about it. We started talking about fixing D&D.
Yeah. I really wanted the teleporter to be made by now. I'm kind of disappointed. I want the point-to-point wormhole technology. None of that Star Trek deconstruct, rebuild bullcrap. I want to step through space. So, oh, Mac is coming from North Dakota?
Good deal.
Son, represent. That is boss. Yeah. So this year, looks like I'm all but committed to run Dungeons and Delvers. Looks like at Big Geek Con, that's gonna be one of the games I'm gonna run.
Which one?
Dungeons and Delvers.
Okay.
Yeah, especially if it's easy for me to read through. Yeah. Our man says so far we can get people to turn to energy. We just can't get them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the Star Trek version of teleportation is not going to ever work because you disintegrate somebody, you cannot reintegrate them. I don't care what you say. But Stargate version, where you walk into what's essentially a gate, you just step from one dimension to the other. There's no disintegration, I don't think, with the wormholes.
Hey,
it's
Joe.
More of a quantum connection that you just get to take advantage of.
Flady wants to make some plans. He says once she's put out the official dates, he'll get his request sent to the boss. I think we need to do our best. Why don't we try to get that done before I go back to break? I got a couple weeks. I want to sit and talk with you. Let's make a hard plan. I'll call him and then see if we can't get. I mean, how hard it will be for you to get the thing up and running with the.
It won't be.
Okay, good. All right, cool. So we'll try to make that for you, Flady, in the next 2 weeks. I keep saying that, but yeah. My next module, that's a good question. You need to get working on the next module. I really do, but I'm leaning toward creating a Horde Wars module. So I may not finish up Tragedy. I may not run the second Tragedy at Tygon's Falls. Yeah.
So, Bruce Lombardo, there's been a couple other comments similar. Did you ever see the Prestige movie? Yeah. Teleportation works? No. It just slays this original subject and makes a clone. But that's Star Trek too, right? You're converted into energy. But the thing is, if you're going to say that the transporter actually sends the energy there and then reincorporates you some kind of way, nah. Because it does take your physical being and make it no longer physical in the way that we know. And then somehow stores all of your data of your body, your thoughts, your organs, your heart's beating, and then somehow on the other end, it works. Somehow your heart goes from beating here to beating there, even though it's no longer beating for a particular amount of time.
But just for an instant, though.
Sure.
If your heart stops beating for an instant, you don't die necessarily. In fact,
you may not. Stop your heart for an instant. Let me see what, and we'll see how
you do it, Joe. I'm gonna let you do it tomorrow, and you fix. You had it. You were an EKG tech, so I expect it'll be fine.
You need to get shocked. No, that doesn't really work. Anyway, no, I don't believe that will work.
Okay.
Take the molecular disassembly. Take it, says Mac Thompson. No.
Joe won't take it. He's a wuss.
Well, I won't be first. That's for sure.
No, the soul's already.
You don't need that soul anyway.
Mine's already called for, brother. Mine's spoken for.
So if I get disassembled here and reassembled there, and the soul doesn't, you know, make the trip, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm with Demo. He said he wants a wormhole teleportation. Me too. No disintegration required. Oh man, what do you think, dude? We about ready to boogie out of here?
Yeah, let's get.
Yeah, guys, it was really good tonight. Thank you so much for everything. We'll have all the links to all the groovy places you can support our show. Joe loves to provide that at the end. I don't think there's anything else we need to say, do we?
No, I have nothing more to say except teleportation is a false hope.
Joe is against teleportation.
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's false.
I'm again teleportation.
Yeah. You guys have a happy new year. We'll see you in a week. Thank you all for being here. And this is Randy.
And this is Joe.
And remember, you can't be big like us and be geeks like us.